Saga podcast. You're listening to Gender Forking.
It's the Twilight Saga podcast.
And that's the Twilight Saga podcast. And today we're talking about chapters 20 and 21 of Midnight Sun, Carlisle, and the game.
Maybe for like...
I'm Lori.
I'm Sam. Maybe for like future seasons, we should get like a... We should include in our intro music something that like says the podcast so that we don't have to do this really awkward thing every time where we're like, hey, it's the podcast! Or is that part of our charm?
Yeah.
Write in, let
us know.
Maybe
it is part of the charm.
It's not charming for me experiencing
it. I feel like
it,
but... otherwise we would start the show saying what?
I don't know. I think we could just be like, hey, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Should we talk about Halloween?
Sure.
I don't know. I don't have anything to say. I just feel like
I feel like this is going to come out after Christmas.
In December. Yeah.
We just got a new president-elect.
Okay, maybe we should talk about Christmas. Maybe we should act like it's almost Christmas or something.
Happy Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. One of those will be accurate, maybe.
Or happy birthday to me.
It'll definitely be up before March.
Happy New Year. 2021. I hope you in the future are much, much happier than we are in 2020.
It's like a time capsule every time we record one of these.
Oh, this is such a huge section. We probably should just jump in, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was actually pretty big. Chapter 20. I would just like to say, if this was a fanfic, I think I would have stopped reading by now.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I agree. Yeah. I think I agree. Okay, here's the problem. There's so much of this book that I like. There's also these parts that I really don't like.
Yeah.
And I feel like I really liked it. I guess what I'm trying to say is I think that the parts that I don't like happen to be sandwiched together right in the middle of the book.
Yeah, I think we just got over a really difficult part.
Yeah, I feel like from Port Angeles to the baseball scene has been extremely intense.
Yes, tumultuous. And it's only going to get more intense, so...
Yeah, I mean, we're not even at the plot.
Yeah.
Like, barely.
Yeah.
So...
There have been parts that I have really liked, but... I don't know if it's just, like, the world or the fact that this is a new book that is, like, dealing with the same old bullshit, but, like, my capacity for that bullshit has been, like, very thin. Also, we just read... This is the third time we're reading the same story in a row.
That's true. Yeah. I feel like maybe if we had been reading something else, like, if we had been, say, on New Moon already and we're revisiting...
Yeah, but
or,
I don't
like,
know.
Eclipse
also,
already.
I feel like we have the capacity to bring this energy every single time.
I'm enjoying it, but if I have to read another chapter that suddenly spirals into Edward talking about the rapists that he's murdered, I'm on thin ice.
Book. It's exhausting. If this was like a fan fiction, I mean, it does sometimes feel like it's a fan fiction because it's just like something that a fan would write, something that the fandom has waited for a long time. But I think if it was a fan fiction, like I wouldn't be putting up with some of this stuff, like, to read it leisurely, I'd be like, I don't like that, and I would skip over a bunch of things or I would stop reading. But then if it was a fanfic, I'd be like, wow, this part's so in character.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah. I don't know. There's definitely things that stand out, and I'm like, wow, what a gift. And then there's parts where I'm like, oh my god, not again.
Yeah.
Why?
This section had, like, a couple of fun parts.
Yes, it did. It definitely did.
This is Carlisle's chapter. You know, not a lot of the information we get in this section is new, but Carlisle's story is presented in this section. Carlisle is, you know, a doctor / art collector, apparently.
On a heavier note. Mm-hmm. Of the Cullens, how many, like, what, four of them, if not more, have attempted suicide?
Oh, shit.
Which I think is something that's so interesting. like Carlisle, initially,
as
right?
a vampire.
Whether as vampire or as human. So Carlisle as a vampire. Edward in New Moon.
Yep. Esme as a human.
Esme as a human. And then eventually Bella will be a Cullen, so I'm just counting Bella. And then Bella's is like...
It's like, did she?
People don't like to talk about it in that way. But, I mean, she's jumping off a cliff with absolutely no preparation. So it's like, had there been no one there to save her, she would have died and they would have called it suicide is what I'm going to say.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
For now, before we dive into it in New Moon. And I just think that's really fascinating. And it's like... I don't know. I'm thinking about this in relation to, like, if you know this is something that's happening in your family, like, multiple times, yeah. Why wasn't someone, like, stalking Edward to make sure that he was okay in New Moon? Mm-hmm. Why wasn't someone more attentive to that?
Yeah.
Knowing that he has, like, a flair for the dramatic. And then I think also the same for Bella in New Moon. Mm-hmm. Like, why weren't they checking up on her? Mm-hmm. I just think it's interesting. And it just, like, sparked that thought in me when Edward was talking about Carlisle's multiple suicide attempts.
Yeah, there's a lot of heavy stuff that gets, like, casually dropped.
Yeah.
In the book in general, but also in this section. I love this children's novel. This is a really fun novel for tweens, teens, and in-betweens.
Yeah. It feels like this isn't a novel for teens or tweens. Yeah. Like, Twilight series, I can definitely buy as a teen-tween novel.
Yeah.
This is a great transition into my next point, which is that the piece of art that they're looking at with the Volturi in it. Yes.
Oh my god.
Edward describes the art as, like, having the scene of an orgy.
Yeah. I was
and I was like, Stephanie, do you know what that is?
That was, like, the last word I ever expected her to use in this novel.
I know. It, like, took me a second to realize, like, the implications of her using that word. Mm. And I was like, wait a second. My Mormon? Like, my Mormon Stephanie Myers said orgy in this book?
And I don't know if it's supposed to be, like, it's referencing that Volturi painting, and I don't know. Which, by the way she's describing it, it does sound like the painting that is in the movie, which is really fun. And she's describing it as, like, the Volturi, like, Aro, Caius, and Marcus are, like, looking from above onto this scene. And part of it includes an orgy. And I'm like, is it other Volturi members? Is it, like, just, like, random people? Right. Like, what's going on in the Volturi?
Random Italians.
Yeah, random Italians. What kind of orgies is the Volturi overseeing / throwing?
Yeah. And, like, the fact that Edward would be so nonchalant about being like, yeah, there was an orgy.
I mean, how dare he?
And not being, like, the depravity of an orgy, which is how, like, Edward would probably view an actual orgy.
Oh my god.
And the fact that, like, okay, Carlisle's just supposed to be in this painting and just, like, standing there, like, ha ha ha, the Volturi are so decadent and, like, whatever. And, like, Carlisle's wild years. You're not telling me Carlisle didn't partake in these orgies.
Oh, he had
if they
to.
Were vampire orgies, you know? Like, why aren't we talking about that?
Is the Volturi, like, a frat and it's, like, they have an initiation? Is this, do they do, oh, like, hazing but it's orgies?
That would make
full Renaissance
sense.
Style.
Oh my god. I love that. There used to be, like, this series on BuzzFeed called Ruining History that Shane Madej ran, and he did this really cool episode on Benjamin Franklin, who apparently was, like, a absolute freak and, like, went to a ton of, like, sex parties and, like, really just, like, hoed it up back then.
I think he died of syphilis, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking about, like, the historical time and, like, the way that people with money had access to, like, these incredibly, for their time, like, progressive sexual activities. Mm. And I was like, vampires have been fucking, you know? Mm-hmm.
They better be.
And we don't get to hear about it.
Yeah.
Very much. Mm-hmm. We only get to hear about it the tiniest bit.
Mm-hmm. Let's revisit
also,
that,
like,
later.
Esme loves this painting.
As, like, a fun comparison to some of the other content in this chapter.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God.
It's just barely mentioned in this book, but this is the second time that, like, Edward has brought up the fact that Carlisle likes to collect art that he comes across in castles and churches. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how does he do that? Does he just buy it? Does he
steal?
Is he like, can I have that? I don't know.
I would imagine he buys it. Like, he's like,
be it.
I mean, there's probably, like, a number he can give, like, a small rural church that they can't refuse, even if they wanted to, like, hold on to that art or if it was meaningful to them. I'm sure there's, like, a number.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's also huge rich people shit. Edward's telling this story. I think it's funny that Carlisle is there to, like, witness Bella's heartbeat going erratically when Edward touches her.
Yeah. And he thinks, interesting.
Interesting. Like, yes, it is. The other little bit of information that I really liked from this section is that Edward says that the longest he's gone without breathing is a couple days, all of it underwater. And I'm like, tell me more about that, Edward.
Yeah, okay, here's my guesses. Was he in transit across the ocean?
I would think so.
How, like, it must take more than, like, it must take, like, a couple days for him to get from, like, continent to continent.
That's terrifying. I'm so scared of the ocean. I think I would still be scared as a vampire.
I think so, too. It's like, I mean, they could just find out what's under there. It's like, if you're interested in marine biology and you're not scared of the ocean and you're a vampire, you could just dive down there and figure it all out.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you feel like it would be too much pressure? Like, I don't understand how
I don't oceans know. Work,
but doesn't water pressure at, like, a certain depth become really, like,
yes,
unsustainable for most life?
Yeah.
I feel like we must, yeah.
We can probably, there's probably ways to approximate that number-wise, because we know that Edward is, like, a lot heavier and, like, denser. Right. He is dense, or denser than a human. He's dense.
Yeah.
He's thick.
That's right. Yeah.
Maybe. I'm sure that the vampires could at least go a lot deeper, and I'm sure the pressure would have an impact on them, but I don't know if it would, like, kill them.
Yeah.
I don't think it would kill them, but it might be uncomfortable.
Probably, yeah.
In some other way. Like, they could survive in space, but they would still need... I think that they would probably still need some sort of protective gear.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's so cold. I don't think the cold would impact them, but, like...
I think it might make them too brittle.
I think something about, like, the composition... Like, there's no oxygen, right? So, first of all, they couldn't breathe. I don't know how that would impact them if they tried to breathe in space. Like, what that would feel like for them. I don't know. I should have Googled this. But, like, not that I was anticipating this conversation, but, like, there's definitely, like, a lot of science about, like, what actually happens to you if you were exposed in space.
Mm.
They couldn't just, like, get launched into space because then they would just be, like, a floating rock in space.
Right.
But.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Anyway.
I thought there was a really nice, like, little line here. I mean, Edward's kind of transitioning into thinking about how he's a monster compared to Carlisle. Mm. Which is fascinating, always. But he blames Siobhan, which is...
Yeah, that was interesting.
Misplaced, in my opinion. But he's like, if I had never been exposed to vampires who weren't animal blood drinkers, weren't vegetarians, and I didn't have to hear Siobhan's thoughts about how great drinking blood was, I never would have done it. And it's like, there's no world in which you wouldn't have run into another vampire, that drank blood. It's like, it was happenstance that it was Siobhan. Like,
it just seems to me... like, such a metaphor for, like, abstinence, you know? And they're literally abstaining from blood. Mm-hmm. And, like, Carlisle has, like, kept him really sheltered and, like, has taught him this way of life of abstinence without really going into depth about why someone might choose another way.
Yeah, and then he blames that slut, Siobhan.
Yeah. I was really attracted to her, by the way. One thing about Midnight Sun that I have really liked is getting to understand Edward's backstory and, like, where he's come from and, like, how he's become the person that he is, because it seems like he hasn't always been this person, which is very interesting. And
yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah, there's this page after the part about the orgy where he says he always envied Carlisle's perfect control, but at the same time believed it was impossible for him to duplicate. He says, I realize now that I'd chosen the lazy way, the path of least resistance, admiring him greatly, but never putting in the effort to become more like him. This crash course in restraint that Bella was teaching me might have been less fraught if I had worked harder to improve in the last 7 decades. Which I think is really interesting in the context of, like, the fact that he chose to go off and kill people. Also, now it seems like Edward is someone who really is trying to emulate Carlisle, but it seems like that wasn't always the case, and it was always weird to read about, like, why he chose to go off and, like, rebel for a couple years when he could, like, completely understand Carlisle's thoughts and, like, rationale behind why they lived the way they did.
Yeah, and it's also interesting because it's, like, what more... I mean, like, there were obviously steps he could take, but... I mean, it's just kind of like this, like, hindsight is 2020.
Yeah.
He didn't anticipate Hot falling in love with a human. And if he doesn't feel called to interact with humans beyond Bella, like, if he doesn't feel called to interact with humans, there's no need for him to, like, go to the lengths that Carlisle did. Like, the reason Carlisle went to those lengths is not out of, like, any, like, higher calling other than the fact that he wants to practice medicine and it's a necessity for him to be... infallible in that sense. Like, he can't fuck up, obviously. And it's just interesting because it's like there would have been no reason for you to have done that. Like, it's not like, I don't think Carlisle views his perfect self-control as some great achievement that all his family should strive for. No. I think he does view it as, like, necessity for what he feels called to do.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a moral thing.
But it feels like Edward is maybe misinterpreting it and just, like, thinking that Carlyle's so humble that he doesn't think of it as a moral thing, but that it is. Yeah. And it's like, I don't think it's actually that deep.
Okay, well.
The inevitable has approached.
I swear to God. I
got so excited for this part. Yeah. Because it was a flashback. I was like, and then flashback. I was so devastated.
Fuck, again. Oh my God. I literally spent like all week, at least 75% of my week, reading about child sexual abuse. My life update for those of you who've been following along at home is that I have a new job where I'm doing sexual violence prevention. So I'm like in the training period for that, where I have to like literally do all these trainings. And so much of that is doing stuff surrounding child sexual abuse, because that's like half of what my agency does. So I literally was reading about that all week, and then I could not even escape in this YA vampire novel.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I literally texted Sam this morning, like the first text I sent to Sam this morning was childhood sexual abuse in my vampire novel. It's more likely than you think.
Oh my God. This is disturbing. This is like, I would say this is probably one of the most graphic parts of the entire saga. So if you haven't read it, huge trigger warning for anyone, actually, regardless of anything you've experienced. It's kind of upsetting to read.
To me, this is legions worse than anything relating to Lanny. Lanny in like the Port Angeles scene.
Yes. This is like, okay, this is so interesting because I think she's trying to achieve something specific here, but I don't think that she's doing it. She being smart.
I was literally like, yeah, I wrote down, I was like, what is she trying to do? Because it's something, but I can't identify what it is because it's so horrible.
I mean, I think what she's trying to demonstrate is Edward's moral quandary of when he was in that rebellious adolescence period of killing people, primarily rapists and harm doers, whatever. This was one of the things that made him realize that he just like doesn't want to do it anymore, and he was happier without like going through all this shit and like experiencing all this vicarious trauma. I think that's what she was trying to achieve, and she was trying to come up with a story that was like a little bit more morally ambiguous for Edward by having him kill someone who hadn't acted yet. And it's like, I don't think that that was the case. I think that he did the right thing. In the meantime, it's not really, I don't know, it just reads like it's not a morally ambiguous situation, because he's trying to emulate this like model of justice that is like very much just the criminal justice system of like innocent until proven guilty, which doesn't really work in this situation. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay, I think it's very interesting. It's like Depression era, which seems to like function as some sort of like setting the tone that it's like a really hard time, which is really interesting. And then it confirms what I was talking about when we were talking about the Port Angeles chapter, and also the last time Edward was like reflecting on his murderous past, that he can only reach people that actively know that they're like, that they're predators or like that they're doing wrong things, which is a small subset of the group of people that do harm. And so that's really fascinating. He's like, he's definitely getting the worst of the worst, which probably is why he feels so traumatized all the time.
Yes, he's seeing the worst shit. And by worst shit, I mean like the most stereotypical shit. Once again, she has chosen to, I think every time sexual violence has come up in this story, it's taken place in an alley.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
I hate that.
Every fucking time. God. She's like, what's the most stereotypical thing that I can do? Here it is.
It's stranger danger in an alley of people that have no relationship to each other.
Who, like a silent stalker, and like every time it seems, I mean, I guess that like other time that he alluded to a couple, like several chapters ago in the Port Angeles chapter, we don't know anything about that guy really, but like with Lanny and with this guy that he's talking about in this section, it's like probably someone of like a lower socioeconomic class. This person in this section is like literally described as like poor and like living on the street, I think. This person is very transparently a pedophile. She doesn't use that word, but it's like the situation that she's illustrating here very graphically is that there's this pedophile who is, I mean, I think this does happen to people who do harm is that they mm-hmm. might wrestle with it a little bit, especially if they, mm-hmm. like, if someone's a pedophile and they, like, know that that's not right, but they, like, whatever, not gonna get into that.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of, like, the thing that this guy is wrestling with, and then, like, in a way, Edward also has to wrestle with.
Yeah.
But it's, like, intention.
It.
Intention?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. I mean, this guy intends to hurt a small child. Obviously, this person is planning to do something. So, like, I mean, if we're going to talk about the criminal justice system, like, in a court of law, if someone could prove that this person had an intent to harm, then they could be charged with something, right? So, like, yeah. Edward's trying to be like, oh, well, he, like, Edward's waiting till the last second to step in. And I'm like, you don't have to mm-hmm. do that. You don't have to make yeah. me anxious.
It's really, it just, it feels like something that could have been accomplished through, like, a much more vague description.
Yes.
That wouldn't be so horrific to read.
Yeah.
Because the way that it reads, it's, like, smaller details are, like, revealed as you get, like, closer to Edward making a decision. Where at first he says, like, oh, it's this guy, and he's going after, like, a young, someone who's just a girl. And it's, like, just a girl can range from, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, like, 3 to, like, 17, 18. Some people still think that people are, like, younger girls at, like, 19, 20.
Yeah.
And so then it's, like, later in this, like, narration, she, like, first, like, names the girl and then is also, like, and she's also 5 or 6. And I was, like, why did you tell me that?
Yeah.
Why do I have to know this? You know?
Yeah.
It just, it feels like something that, it feels like an intentional attempt to age up the book, too.
Yeah.
I feel like it's serving the purpose that you said, but also it's, like, serving the purpose to demonstrate that this is a mature book and that it's wrestling with mature themes and that it's, like, showing growth from her being, like, a YA literature writer to being, like, a writer, period. And it's, like, a fiction writer, period. And it's like, did you have to do it this way?
Yeah, this was the only way, Stephanie. I just, like, in other sections, I don't know, it's upsetting to think about. In other sections, he's thinking very, I'm thinking about the way that Edward thinks about these people. So mm-hmm. if we have 3 examples now, we have this guy from the 1930s, and we have the other guy who was, like, torturing 2 women that he referenced in the Port Angeles chapter, and then there's Lanny, who obviously was trying to hurt Bella. Seems like his thoughts towards the other two, not this most recent one, were much more, he was much more convinced that those people were very obviously bad, and it's because those people saw their victims as, like, they felt no sympathy for what they were doing. They were, like, looking forward to the cruelty of what they were doing, and with this guy, he's not necessarily feeling that way. And I'm like, the actions are the same. That is all we can really think about when we are wondering if there is mm-hmm. a problem and whether or not we need to intervene.
Yeah. Yes. It's really fascinating because Edward calls, like, the other situation that we don't know as much about with the two, like, the basement thing. Like, he recalls that after Port Angeles as, like, the worst thing like, that he ever witnessed. Like, that's what he classifies as the worst. And I'm like,
maybe it's because that guy had already acted, like, he couldn't intervene before.
Yeah.
And also, those people had done things in the past, so with other people, he felt like if they'd already done harm in the past, he was just catching them now, and it didn't matter, like, what they were doing right now, but this guy hadn't done anything yet. It's just, like, a really unsurprisingly poor understanding of how these things happen, usually.
It's also really interesting to think about, like, Edward hasn't interacted with children in, like younger children in the series. It stands to think that, like, he doesn't come in contact with children ever.
No.
You know?
Until he has Renesmee.
Ever. Until he has Renesmee. And so I'm like, this was the last time that it got this close, probably, to an actual child, like a non-teenage child in your entire vampire existence. Like, what does that bring up for you when Renesmee is getting to be around that age? What does that bring up for you when Renesmee's life is threatened by the Volturi? Like,
what does it bring up for you when a grown man imprints on your baby daughter? You know,
that's an excellent question. I black that out. That's a great question. I feel like if I were Edward, I would simply kill Jacob in that moment. Like, I'm all for, like, reading Midnight Sun, especially from a Jacob sympathetic lens, because yes. he hasn't done anything. But it's like the, oh my God.
I'm so upset right now. This is so deeply, this is like the most upsetting thing of the entire saga that we've read. I just,
it's, yeah.
It's just, that's upsetting, like, not, irregardless of what, how Edward reacts to these, those two situations side by side, child sexual abuse more often takes place in the latter kind of scenario, rather than this scenario that is written about. Mm-hmm. It is more often somebody that is known and trusted and close to the child, rather than, like, a fucking dark alley.
Yeah.
So that is seems very irresponsible to me. That's, like, one of Stephanie's top 10 most irresponsible takes.
Yeah, I would honestly say, like, top 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, what a horrific thing.
Yeah. Is there anything else that it's we like, need to say about this?
I don't think so. I think it's, I don't know. It's interesting, like, the setting is interesting to think about, like, the Great Depression, and, like, it's interesting to think about, like, the, maybe the implication that, like, violence festers in uncertain economic times and, like, war and things like that, which is true
for sure.
historically, stuff like that, but probably nothing else worth saying. I'm sure she didn't actually research that. I'm sure she just, like, was like, I want to take this on. It feels like Glee, can I say? It feels yeah, like it she wants to tackle every issue now, and it's like she's trying to, like, cram them all in now.
Yeah.
And so she's like, I have to have Edward talk about childhood sexual assault or abuse.
She's like, and the showrunner, and she's also Mr. Shu.
Oh my God. Oh God.
Yeah.
I hate it.
I really hated this part. It was actually very upsetting to read. Yeah. The Great Depression thing was interesting. I was like, tell me something different about the Great Depression. Because I do think it's interesting that Edward was going on this little foray during the Great Depression, and he actually said, wait, what did he say? It was really funny. He said, at the time, I wondered whether the pervasive despair and dread in the minds around me were a contributing factor to the melancholy that was beginning to plague me, but I think even then I knew that my personal depression was wholly due to my own choices.
It's so funny. It's just funny. It's funny. It's a funny take on depression, too. Like, yeah. to be like, I caused this by my choices, mm-hmm. and not, like, I think I might be prone to mental illness. Like,
yeah, it's hard to say. Like, I definitely think Edward experiences a lot of, like, situational depression rather than, like, chronic depression. I mean, I don't know that vampires can experience chronic depression unless they're, like, maybe frozen in it, because they don't have the same brain chemistry as humans.
Yeah.
So, like, if they're gonna feel depression, it's, like, as an emotion and not, like, a mental illness.
Which is interesting, because he seems to also feel, like, anxiety, you know?
Yeah.
And he has, like, I don't know, he seems to have these, like, compulsive protective behaviors towards Bella, mm-hmm. too. And I'm, like,
like, relationship compulsions.
What's your excuse?
I know, right? It's, like, maybe it's the patriarchy. Hot take. Socializing him to behave in these destructive and erratic ways.
Oh boy.
All right, everyone take a deep breath, because I'm like,
everyone
on the,
do your favorite grounding exercise.
I'm like literally on the verge of dissociating because of that, so.
Yeah, horrific. Let's talk about something fun.
Yeah,
that, like, Edward categorizes his CDs by year,
and he also has his sound system built into the walls, so it sounds really, like, really realistic, like he's in a concert venue basically.
We love that.
This is a very sweet scene, Bella being in his room. Wish I could enjoy
it. Yeah. It just takes a lot to be able to grapple with something like that and then keep an audience engaged in the rest of your story.
Yeah.
I feel like I snapped back into reading this when in the next chapter they started talking about the Quileutes again, because I was like, don't.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, I was, like, hyper-vigilant, like, stop, you know?
Which,
and, like,
we should have a segment in this podcast. Like, but that's, like, how many times per chapter does Stephanie Meyer activate our fight, flight, or freeze?
Yeah, and which one does it activate?
I feel like, she activates, she activated my freeze and also my fight.
Yeah. I feel like freeze... definitely kept reading, so not flight, but
yeah,
definitely freeze.
I don't usually flight. Mm-hmm. That's fun, wild. Stephanie. Thanks. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Such a good friend. So considerate.
And then every time she talks about Billy or the treaty or Jacob or anything like that, I have my fight and the lesser known fourth instinct, research, activated.
I would just like to revisit the dedication to this book. This book is dedicated to all readers who have been such a happy part of my life for the last 15 years. When we first met, many of you were young teenagers with bright, beautiful eyes full of dreams for the future. I hope that in the years that have passed, you've all found your dreams and the reality was even better than you hoped. The reality of this book is not better than I hoped.
What a thing to say to people in 2020. You know? Like, I feel like I'm so delicate when I speak to people now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I can never ask anything of anyone.
Yeah, I'm like, are you breathing and eating? Like, oh, that's so great. I'm so happy. Like, you know, like, that's all we really hope for. Like, you want me to achieve my dreams in a pandemic?
To, like, fully change the subject. The part where Alice and Jasper come into the room to invite...
So sweet.
To invite them to play baseball. The insight about Jasper was so fascinating.
Yes.
I really loved it.
So I guess the insight about Jasper is that Jasper is delighted by the feeling that he is able to absorb when he's around Edward and mm-hmm. Bella together, because they are so full of, like, bliss and joy and love, which is so wholesome.
Yes.
Like, and it made me think a couple of things. Like, one... the fact that he's truly, like, excited and kind of desperate to spend more time with them. One, is he trying to be their third?
That was my first thought. Jasper's like, I, too, am part of this relationship.
Yeah.
It's like Bella and Edward are just vibing, and Jasper stands there with his hand on both of them the whole time. What's that?
That's like me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Alex.
Your relationship, it's like a drug
to
me. Also, it's interesting that Edward can, in this moment, Edward can feel what Bella is feeling because he can read Jasper's thoughts, emotions, experiences, yeah. Which is like, that's cool. Like, talk about that for a second more. Like, that's really interesting.
My second thought was, it's going to be so devastating to Jasper when he attacks Bella in New Moon and ruins. I mean, it's obviously not Jasper's fault. Like, it's not. It's obviously Edward's, like, Edward was looking for an excuse to leave, in my opinion. Mm. We'll get there. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, Jasper's gonna obviously blame himself. And then I feel like knowing that he is so invested in their relationship and it brings him such joy probably makes that so much harder for him to grapple with.
I mean, it's too bad we won't have any insight as to what he will be experiencing over the next several chapters when he's, like, holed up in a hotel room with Bella and, like, spends a lot of the time, like, not in the same room as her. And when he does, like, he tends to influence her emotions, which I always found really annoying, and it still is, but it's also, like, maybe it's to help himself.
Yeah.
If he really feels it that strongly.
Yeah, that's true.
The only other time that I remember this happening is, I do remember in Breaking Dawn, there's a part after Bella becomes a vampire where he's, like, constantly hovering around her because she's so happy.
Oh,
I do remember that.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
How sweet.
That is really sweet.
I'm looking forward to that in, like, 4 years when we get to Breaking
Dawn. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's put off as much as possible, honestly.
Yeah. We'll read the entire 50 Shades of Grey series.
Oh, my God.
Breaking Dawn. The last thought that I had was, it takes, like, a very certain type of couple to not be incredibly annoying to be around.
Yeah.
In the early stages of their relationship, in my opinion. Like,
mm-hmm.
I feel like... what's made me think this is that I cannot stand Dale and Claire on The Bachelorette. They make me murderous. I think I am really annoying Helen because I hate them together so much. Like, I can't watch them be in love. It makes me sick.
Mm-hmm. You sound like me.
And truly, like,
love is my thing.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And it's, like, it doesn't, I mean, it's not an every couple thing for me. Like, I'm not jaded or anything. Like, I would sit
yeah.
and observe Sam and Alex for 6 months
yeah, yeah, yeah,
on
yeah,
end.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Of course. Mm-hmm. But there's certain couples that have certain behaviors that just make them really unbearable. And in my opinion, Claire and Dale are one of them. And so it's really interesting to see that, like, Edward and Bella are so annoying to Rosalie and so wonderful to Jasper and Alice.
I think I'd be more on the Rosalie side here. I think I would find them really annoying because I find reading about them very annoying. I mean, I get it. Like, I'm happy for them. I think Jasper can experience, like, the purest form of being happy for them because he can literally feel what they're feeling, very sensate. Alice is Alice. She's, like, a matchmaker. She is, like, probably in love with Bella, whatever.
Right.
But
right.
Rosalie just sees their, like, annoying behaviors. And they're, like, way too intense with each other, so.
It makes me wonder, like, you just have to be, like, invested in at least one half of the couple to, like, really...
Yes.
Be not annoyed.
Yeah.
By it.
That's kind of the end of the chapter.
Yeah, the only other thing... Oh, no, that's all I had. Oh, wait, no, I did have one thing. Okay. This is just really small. Bella asks if she needs an umbrella. All right.
It's a great question.
So the implication is, and not implication, they say we only play when there's thunder, which means it's going to be a lightning storm because, you know, thunder, lightning.
Yes.
If you're in a clearing, do not use an umbrella. If that, if you are in a situation where you whipping out an umbrella in a thunderstorm will make you the tallest thing around you, i.e. standing in the middle of a, like, a field or a clearing, you then become the target for the lightning.
Are vampires faster than lightning?
That's a really good question, but it would be so funny if Bella whips out an umbrella and the central conflict of Twilight is now that Bella has been struck by lightning because no one had the good sense to say, umbrella, it's gonna be lightning out. I feel like for some reason, I mean, I was born in the lightning capital of the world, and so I know all about lightning safety, which a lot of people actually don't know. There are a lot of things that you, like, shouldn't do during a lightning storm. You're, like, usually most places are fine if you have an umbrella during a lightning storm. You're not going to be taller than most buildings. You're not going to be taller than, like, trees and stuff like that. But if you're in a clearing, you're not supposed to use an umbrella.
Yeah.
You're also not supposed to take a shower, wash dishes.
What?
Or use running water in the home because lightning can be conducted through metal pipes.
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to, like, be anywhere, like, near that stuff. And you're also not supposed to use, like, electronics that are, like, plugged into the wall, like a desktop computer or anything like that. So I thought that was really interesting. I just wanted to throw in a little lightning safety for everyone. A lot of people will tell you that these things are unnecessary, and that's probably true now, but it's better safe than sorry. And I know that the reason why, like, you, like, these things are probably overkill for places that don't get a lot of lightning, but we have, like, in Tampa, you average, like, so many lightning strikes in every, like, thunderstorm, and it's just, like, really absurd. And so
it's also flat there.
That's the thing. It's like, there are definitely situations where if you're walking through, like, a really large parking lot or something like that, you are the tallest thing if you have an umbrella out, so just get wet. Mm-hmm. You'd rather definitely, you know, get wet than be struck by lightning.
Wow. So treacherous.
Fun facts. Just another way Bella could have died.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
If a vampire got struck by lightning, they'd probably lose all their hair, which would be really funny.
You're right.
What if Edward just got bald right there?
It would never come back.
Oh my god.
Oh, that'd be so good.
I think hair is one of the only things Edward has going for him at this point, so that'd be really unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, you lose so much when you become a vampire. Just pulling up the Forks cast.
Yes, tell me.
All right. Today in Forks, it's 48 degrees and sunny. The high is 48, the low is 30. It's going to rain pretty much all week. So, like, 60 to 90% chance of rain for the next, like, 10 days. Wow. It's going to stay around that general temperature range. So that's really fun and fresh for them.
Chapter 21, the game.
American baseball.
American baseball. This was a long-ass chapter. I was really not expecting it to be so jam-packed. Long.
Yes. When I realized how long they were going on about Billy and Jacob and stuff like that, I was like, the whole baseball game is in this, which, to be honest, I didn't take very many notes on the game because I didn't understand it.
Oh my god, I had this moment where I was like,
I don't know how baseball works.
Yeah, I was like, oh my god, we're gonna get to know what actually happens in the game. Joke's on me, my eyes started glazing over instantly.
I literally couldn't process it. I don't know how baseball works.
Like, it's being described exactly what's happening, and I still could not picture it.
I literally was almost gonna text you and be like, should we get somebody, like, to talk about the baseball game for us? Because, like, I don't think I really have anything to say.
If you want to hear about baseball, you need to go listen to a different podcast.
Yeah, if you want to hear about baseball, why don't you go watch a fucking baseball game? It's my first note for chapter 21. There's no food in the Cullens' house, which is not surprising.
Yeah.
But here's my proposition. In a small town, probably one person owns their grocery store. Mm-hmm. It's likely a local. Mm-hmm. It's likely a bunch of locals that work there. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Cullens could get away with never grocery shopping.
No, Esme has to go. Let me look
she
it up.
She has to go.
Forks Washington grocery store.
The food, the grocery store.
I feel like I've looked this up before. they've got a Thriftway, but like Thriftways... I mean, the Thriftway in Orono sucked.
Yeah.
I feel like, but Bella mentions shopping at the Thriftway.
Yeah. And it was, I think the Thriftway in Orono was locally owned. Like, yeah. I'm pretty sure the guy that owned the Thriftway was just some random.
There was some good stuff there, but it was all, like, you couldn't, like, truly grocery shop there.
I attempted to, like, once, and I was like, never mind, actually.
Oh, they've got, like, a Hispanic market in Forks. That's cool.
Huh.
And then the only thing is Ron's Food Mart, which actually looks like it is a gas station. Native to Twilight.
Yeah, I lived
what's
across...
that?
What?
Are you fucking kidding me? It's like a Twilight store. How have I never heard of this before? Okay, it says Native Twilight in the art, and some of the contents inside the store make me think like Native as in like indigenous.
Interesting.
There's photos from last year. I'm seeing dream catchers for sale. I am seeing lots of indigenous art for sale, and I'm seeing cardboard cutouts and lots of movie paraphernalia for sale.
I simply would love to go.
Carvings of wolves? Figurines?
I would
Twilight
be
dolls.
Really fascinated to know if this is owned by someone Native.
I mean, it wouldn't be a stretch for it to... Oh, they've got a pair of Jacob's khaki shorts framed on the wall. You can't make this shit up.
The way that I would just absolutely blow an entire paycheck in that store, you know?
It's like so easy in this town to get your hands on actual movie merch. They've got lots of movie stuff. Damn it. Fuck. This is like where you'll go to buy like your shirts that say La Push on them or whatever, like your Forks Washington shirts.
Right.
There's lots of, I'm looking at a pair of hot pink La Push shorts right now. Anyway, I think the Thriftway is the grocery store.
Oh my gosh, I'm looking at the pictures. Oh, this is the store that has the truck parked out front.
Oh, that makes sense. How exciting.
Yeah, that's thrilling.
It makes sense to me that this store exists. I guess I just never like looked up like exactly what it was or where it was. This Thriftway looks extremely legit.
Oh, cool.
It looks like a real-ass grocery store.
Yeah, I just don't buy that Esme could get away, or not that it's Esme's responsibility, blah, 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 gender, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's probably her, right?
But, like, it's probably her. I just don't buy that they could get away with never, like, showing their faces in conventional ways around town. Like,
yeah.
I think it does a lot for them that Carlisle works, and I think it does a lot for them that the kids go to school, but I don't think that they can get away with not going to, like... I mean, if the town has, like, a 4th of July celebration or something like that that usually, like, pulls people out, mm-hmm. I would say that they would have to go. Like, I would say that they would have to go to, like, a Christmas market or, like a New Year's celebration that's held in town. Like, yes. I don't think they can get away with, like, not partaking in these stupid small-town,
community
like, traditions.
Things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever those things may be in Forks, I don't know. But, yeah, this is a really right. legit grocery store. It's got, like, a cafe in it and, like, a hot... like hot bars and like delis and stuff, so no one is starving.
Would love to grocery shop there one yeah. day. We should just like quit our jobs and like just move there for like a social experiment of like
yes
how well could we incorporate ourselves into
probably
Forks,
like pretty
well. Yeah, I think we could do great. Anyway, that was a small aside that brought us down a long journey.
It's one of those days. I guess Esme did not go grocery shopping ahead of having Bella in the house, which is one thing that I like that the movie explored. Mm-hmm. Because, like, that's a very real possibility that they would do that. Some more really interesting Edward and Billy time.
I hate it.
I hate it.
Let's just say that I hate it.
Yep.
It seems out of character that Billy would attempt to break the treaty.
Well, I mean, Billy doesn't know that Edward can read minds, right? So, I think.
That's true.
So, we've wondered over the course of this book and maybe Twilight, like, when do the wolves start reappearing? And, like, we've wondered, like, are they already there? Because then Billy would know about it and he would definitely be thinking about it, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe they're not there because he wouldn't know to control his thoughts about that. And I feel like if there were
That's
wolves,
true.
he would be less afraid.
Yeah.
Because he's very afraid here.
Yeah, And it's interesting, though, because it's, like, I guess he's not worried about breaking the treaty because he doesn't think that Edward can read minds. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this is, like, you know, it was, like, fucked up of Edward to put it like this, but it's true that he doesn't have anything to protect himself. So, like, if he does break the treaty, that does open them up to the possibility of the Cullens attacking, which they should never do because it's really incredibly fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And also genocide, etc. Mm-hmm. But it does open them up to that possibility, and that could be, like, incredibly dangerous. Like, it's a huge risk for him to take to try to protect Bella by telling Charlie. He's risking his entire nation.
Yeah.
And family, you know?
Yeah.
I think it might say, too, like, a little bit about how much he trusts Charlie, that Charlie would keep that safe.
I mean, do we think that he's trying to tell Charlie, like, the Cullens are vampires, or if he's just going to try to be like, they're dangerous in some other way?
Well, I mean, Edward kind of says, like, he is planning on breaking the treaty, you know? He says that, which surprised me, because, I don't know, I just don't see how Charlie could believe it.
It's interesting, in this section, Edward is listening in, so he hears, you know, the conversation that Bella and Billy have, but he also hears Billy's thoughts, and there's one part where mm-hmm. Billy is, like, thinking that Bella reminds him of one of his daughters. Makes me think that, like, Billy does care about Bella, and, like, genuinely wants yeah. the best for her. And, I mean, I know we've talked about this in Twilight, but, like, he's the only one who can really bring up concern properly.
I agree, and I feel like it's hard because, I don't know, I hate that Bella's love of Edward has translated into her
rivalry.
I don't know, it feels unnecessary that there's a rivalry at this point, because it's like, I feel like when people express concern for me sometimes over things that I don't think are maybe appropriate for them to be expressing concern about, it doesn't usually make me mad in the way that she's, like, she's being really cold to him, and she's being, like, I think she's doing it out of what she thinks is necessity, yeah. but I feel like she could just have, like, a more open conversation with Billy, like, I understand your concern, and I appreciate it, but I'm going to continue to make my own choices. It seems like she's buying into this vampire versus werewolf thing that has not even been introduced at this point.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. She's getting really, like, defensive and protective, which is definitely, like, a theme. One little detail that I really, really liked was that Jacob notices that something smells weird.
Mm,
and he's, like, definitely yeah. smelling Edward.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. Just, like, a little
interesting. Uh-huh. I really picked up on this thing that Billy said. He said, I can't alienate him again, in reference to Charlie,
yeah.
which means that there's been something that's occurred in the past that has alienated them from each other, whether that be, like, him speaking poorly of the Cullens in general, and Charlie being like, I won't stand for that.
Yeah.
Or, like, some sort of other conflict that they've had in the past. Like, we're supposed to believe that they're best friends, but that, like, also that something has happened between them that has caused, like, a rift between them in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why Charlie wouldn't like that. I mean, as, like, sheriff of the town, he's, like, got to serve and protect everyone equally. I can see why, like, regardless of, like, whatever relationship he might have with any of the Cullens, he would be resistant to, like, taking sides, quote-unquote, in favor of impartiality. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but, like, how old is Billy?
That's a really good question. I don't know.
People keep talking about him as an old man, and it's like, well, he has, a 15-year-old son, and, like, two daughters that are, yeah. like, barely adults. I think, like, it's easy to assume that he's the same age as Charlie, but Charlie's pretty young.
Yeah.
Charlie's, like, in his late 30s.
I think it's because they're, like, I don't know, they're, like, the oldest people in the movie, that people look at them as if they're older.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or maybe it's because, like, maybe the Twilight generation has kind of, like, aged up, and we
yeah.
are viewing them as, like, the same age as our parents. Mm-hmm.
There's even a part here where Jacob refers to Billy as, like, senile.
Yeah.
So.
Which, like, I do understand, like, why Jacob is, like, this is obscene. Like, this is crazy. Like, you are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Losing it. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Jacob's so one-dimensional in this story.
Yeah, he really doesn't. I mean, I guess he just really hasn't come across Edward's, like, radar as anything other than, like, kind of, like, a petty threat.
Yeah, yeah.
At, like, anything, you know? Oh, boy, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Poor Billy is just, like, doing his best, and, like, Edward, like, refers to him and the rest of the tribal elders as, like, cronies.
Yeah, that was wild.
And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I don't know. Also, it's really interesting because it's, like, I mean, this is just for, like, the purpose of the story, but it's, like, they are the tribal elders, and they're not really that old. Is this a commentary on, like,
No, it's not.
Life expectancy.
In indigenous populations. I don't know how I got that.
That's interesting. I mean, it probably is just so that, like, there doesn't have to be, like, an entire layer of, or entire generation of people introduced through the story who are not primary to the plot. But
we have this, like, flashback that isn't a flashback. It's, like, Billy remembering something, which I thought was really, really interesting. Edward, like, is running alongside the car as Billy and Jacob leave. And Billy is recalling this memory of when the Cullens came back to Forks 2.5 years ago, and Carlisle called ahead, pretended to be a distant family member to Ephraim Black. We can unpack that another time, maybe.
Wild.
And got Billy's phone number and called Billy to be like, "We're coming back." Billy's very freaked out by this because I guess up until this point, like, I don't know, it kind of seems like Billy doesn't necessarily know if this thing is, like, if the Cullens are, like, legend or not.
Yeah.
I don't know how this is supposed to come across.
It really rose a lot of questions for me in terms of, like, how this story is passed down and at what point it becomes necessary to hammer home that this is true to people. Because, like, obviously someone needs to know.
Yeah.
But it seems like they wait until they're older than a certain point to tell them, and then it's like, do you tell an entire generation of children at the same time that it's real, or like, I don't know, it's so interesting.
Yeah,
it seems like he believes that it's true, he just doesn't think they'll ever come back.
Carlisle tells him here, like, our current plan is to live in Forks for about a decade. I'm like, that's horrifying for Billy. Like, he's horrified here, and like, they kind of are talking about the treaty. I guess, like, the vampires get a 5-mile radius around the location of their lair. Just such a funny way to think about their house.
Yeah, which is really interesting, too, because I don't think we've known that before.
No, I don't think so either.
Is contrary to what happens in the movie, because the wolves come, like, right up to the house.
And I think that even happens in Breaking Dawn, right? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Like, the book.
They're, like, literally, like, pacing around the outside of the house, I believe. And they have, like, the defenses up all the time while Bella's pregnant.
Yeah. So I guess that doesn't really track. But the thing that Billy's concerned about is, like, how do we enforce that? How do we enforce a 5-mile radius, like, to these young people who don't think that this is real?
Right.
How do you even start to do that? Yeah.
I mean, 10 years is such a long time, too. Like, I really, like, feel for him. Like, yeah. I don't... Like, what do? You have no defenses. You also then, I'm sure he's panicking that, oh God, like, now we have an entire generation of children who are at risk of, like phasing into werewolves. Like, how do you prevent that? Like, is that something that's going to happen? Mm-hmm. Like, does he need to be worried for himself? Like, he's still not that old at that point, right? Yeah. Like, does he have to be worried for his son? Like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. And there's more of them now, too.
Yeah. Stephanie name drops the Maka Nation, which is just north of where the Quileute Nation is. It's in Nia Bay, which is just, like, the top western corner of Washington, about, like, an hour and a half away by car, when she talks about who Carlisle, like, calls ahead to.
Yeah.
And I was like, so did you Google?
I think I know that name.
Tribes. Oh, really?
I feel like Alma Young, or Young in general, is, like, within the lineage, a distant relative of, like, Charlie.
Oh, really?
I remember, like, reading about that somewhere. I mean, all it's in for the wiki is in regards to Midnight Sun.
Oh, interesting. So, I guess this isn't new research for Stephanie, because something that I don't remember from New Moon is that Emily, Claire, and Embry's mom are from that tribe. And yes. So they are, like, related. Or so this is something that's been mentioned in the books before. Mm-hmm. I was about to be like, Stephanie did more quasi-research on Native people, but apparently she probably just pulled from the limited information she already had.
I forgot that Renee Dwyer is her new married name. Her maiden name is Higginbotham. We could have Bella Higginbotham.
I'm glad we don't. Mm-hmm. Swan is so much nicer.
Yeah. I can't find this, but I really feel like the Youngs possibly trace back in heritage to, like, maybe Charlie. Didn't we read something and then I was like, are Bella and Jacob related?
I think we did. I think you're
and
right.
And I blacked that out until this moment because it's so disturbing.
I'm looking up, like, a family tree. The farthest back I can find is to her grandparents.
Well, Emily Young is Emily.
That's true. So
from and she's from the same tribe. She's part Quileute on her mother's side. So she's probably related to Alma.
Interesting.
Oh, and her niece is Claire. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck that. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway.
That's all I really had for this section. Just, like, that, you know, it's terrifying for Billy and that
yeah.
Edward's attitude is bad. He is just looking for them to fuck up so that, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that it's a stressful situation for them both, but I don't understand how Edward doesn't see the, like, inherent power differential between, like, 11 supernatural people and, like, a niche, a very small nation of people that have a few who have the potential to become
right
threats, you know?
Yeah.
That Edward doesn't think is possible.
There's also, like, a little mention in this conversation between Carlisle and Billy where Carlisle's like, I don't know if any of, like, the people from the tribe come to the Forks High School. And Billy's like, they don't. But if they did, oh my god. Can you imagine if Jacob went to the same school?
The drama.
It would be like Vampire Diaries. It would be like Riverdale.
It would. Oh my god. I feel like Carlisle, obviously, like, much better that Carlisle call ahead.
Yeah.
And I think that's, like, really great. But I feel like it may have been more powerful to acknowledge, like, I acknowledge that this is really difficult for you. Please rest assured that XYZ.
Carla's really out here, like, making the neighborhood sex predator call. Hi, I'm moving into your area.
Yeah.
And I'm on the sex truly. Registry.
Hi, I have the potential to commit genocide to your people. and I'm going to live here for 10 years. So, oh my god, how stressful. Yeah. It makes me wonder, I guess I was trying to say this earlier, but I don't know if I actually ever got it across, but it makes me wonder if, like, Jacob's generation is just, like, less likely to believe these old legends, or, like, if there's, like, a time that they clue them in the future, mm-hmm. but, or if, like, they've tried to clue them in, but they just, like, don't believe.
Yeah. Rosalie is the best part of this entire book. Every time Rosalie is here, I'm like, this book is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And every time she's not here, I'm like, when is she coming back? In this section, she almost hits Edward with her car. Which is fun. Edward tells her that she's important to him. I'm like, okay.
All right. yeah.
Where?
Prove it.
Yeah. But I guess he really wants her to come to the baseball game.
Which is interesting. Yeah. Like, it seems like a tone shift from, like, how he's been, like, thinking about her. I don't know. Like, it's like, why do you want her there? Like, it feels like he's trying to, like, prove a point or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels like he's trying to be like, see, like, Bella's not so bad. You're going to get along with her so well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, shut up.
Yeah. Don't tell her what to
just
do.
Just let her be.
Yeah.
Like, this is so quick for her to be, like, on her best behavior or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It's like she literally said it was too fast for her to, like, get over it by, yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
When they first met.
No, it was
and
today.
Now it's like, or no, today. Earlier that morning. Yeah. And it's like, now you expect her to be fine, like, a couple hours later? Why? Like, why?
I did enjoy this, like, page of, like, domestic Cullen time. That was fun.
It was really nice.
Yeah.
When Esme yells at Edward for dripping on the floor and tells him to mop it up.
And he's mopping.
Precious.
Edward mopping. I like that he's getting ready to meet Charlie and he's like, I'm going to impress him by dressing properly for the weather so he knows that I take the rain seriously.
So funny.
But when he, like, actually gets there, their conversation is so short. Like, he's, like, talking to Charlie for, like, 30 seconds. He, like, comes in, takes off his jacket, sits down, and then Bella's like, time to go, and then he puts back his jacket back on again.
It comes across as if they had this, like, bonding moment where they're, like, both laughing, but I was like, y'all have known each other for 15 seconds.
Yeah.
It also seems like when Bella starts talking to Charlie about Edward, he doesn't really know the siblings apart from each other, and so he imagines Emmett's face.
I love that Edward noticed that part.
Yeah. I, like, feel like my entire soul left my body and I just, like, tried to black out the one of my least favorite scenes of Twilight where Edward gets Bella distracted before getting incredibly nauseous by running.
I hate this scene.
There's really, like, no explanation beyond what we already knew.
Yeah.
Which is that he's trying to distract her, and I was like, ew, it's still not better.
No.
It's always gonna be this awful.
It's so horny. It's even hornier.
It's very Edward. Horny.
And it reads very much like the devil is inside of him and, like, he's needs to not give in to his temptations and, like, sin or whatever. It's very annoying.
Yeah, I hate it.
He gets frustrated thinking about, like, what would happen if she, you know, innocently, like, touched her tongue to his teeth. And I'm like, maybe you should tell her that she shouldn't do that if you're worried about that.
Yeah, it's like, at this point, she has barely even knew that you didn't breathe. It's like, she needs to be aware of these risks mm-hmm. that she's taking or that, like, you're taking or, like, all these things. Like, I don't know. I'm just like, what are you doing?
And, like, he gets mad here and, like, he's only getting mad at himself. He's never mad at her, whatever. But, like, mm-hmm. he's mad because, like, he's starting to imagine, like, again, if he accidentally killed her, like, she would be dead, obviously. And then he's like, but I too would die because if she dies, then I will surely die as well. And I'm like, actually, you will yeah. not. And we need to separate those two things.
It's like, you won't, and you will have had 100 and whatever years of life, and she will have had 17, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. There's a difference.
Yeah. But yeah, let's just not acknowledge that, I guess. Yell at him, Bella.
It's really sweet when, like, they show up that Emmett is, like, really excited.
Yeah, yeah.
To meet her and, like, is talking to her and, like, really making an effort because he didn't get to meet her because he and Rosalie were, like, Emmett. Gone earlier. And he is, like, he's, like, I like her. Like, I like her. She's cool. Like, just so excited. And that's really sweet.
And Esme's so excited. Esme asks mm-hmm. to have alone time with her. Precious.
Yeah, they're all, like, really getting along really well. Yeah. I feel like if
even when Rosalie's trying.
In the absence, yeah, it says that Rosalie, like, softens up to Bella yeah. because Bella is, like, applauding her playing yeah. and stuff like that. And Edward makes a note that, like, maybe he should talk about with Rosalie how Bella thinks she's beautiful, yeah. which is so amazing.
It's like, do it. Bella thinks you're really hot. Yeah.
Bella's super into you.
This section made me think about when Bella is a vampire and, like, maybe she's playing vampire baseball as a vampire or whatever. Like, she can shield everyone from, or shield Edward from everyone's powers, or, like, shield everyone from Edward's mind reading to, like, make the...
That's true.
The playing field, so to speak, more even. And also, like, that changes for, like, all games. Because, like, earlier in the book, he was like, only Alice will play games with me anymore. So, like, she could That's really true. Help it. So either people could cheat against him or to make up for the years that he's had advantage over him. Or she can, like, guard everyone's minds so there's no advantages.
I love that.
Or I don't know about Jasper's power. I can't remember if Jasper's power is... physical or not, but
it seems like they have some amended rules to baseball. Yes. But again, don't make sense to me. They say things like, he's trying to force an out, that's against our family rules, and I'm like,
what is that?
He's trying to what? Like, so highly recommend reading this section because I'm sure there's, like, fun things that I didn't pick up on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because of my misunderstanding or just, like, not understanding.
I really didn't
baseball
get it at all. There is this moment where Edward's realizing that Esme and Bella's conversation has taken kind of an intimate turn, and mm-hmm. he says, I wonder why she decided to share that, or perhaps Esme hadn't decided at all. There was something about the way Bella listened. Hadn't I been eager to spill every dark secret I ever had? Hadn't young Jacob Black betrayed an ancient treaty simply to amuse her? She must have this effect on everyone. And I'm like, that would be such a good vampire power for her to have.
That's what I would want. Yeah. That's what I would yes. want. I love Secrets. When people talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love when people just go for yeah. it. I'm like, so what's going on? And how's your mom? And how's her ex-boyfriend? Like, I would love that.
You should really just be a hairdresser.
Oh my god, I really should be. And you know, I'm getting good at
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I'm getting good yeah. at it.
I have a question about the baseball game, which is not really so much about what's happening, but, like, how does the baseball survive this?
JJ, baseball question? Do we feel like a baseball would even survive vampire baseball?
No.
He said no.
I doubt it. Like, they're really going hard.
They must have special balls made for them or something like that. Or maybe they just replace the ball every inning?
They have a bunch of balls.
Me waiting for someone to tell me that inning is not the Hello. Right word.
Inning is, I think, inning is the right word, I think.
I've literally, like, I've been to baseball games. They're fun to watch and go to. and there's like fun snacks and songs and stuff.
Bella's job should be like the ball person, like the person who like has the extra balls.
I feel like she's not fast enough though, you know, like I feel like they would be like, she's taking forever. No, you know?
But she could just stand there by the like by the catcher and just like have the balls in her hands just so she can have something to do.
That's true. I feel like Edward wouldn't let her that close because he'd be afraid that a ball would hit her. I think it would literally kill her.
It would kill her.
If a ball thrown by one of them hit her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It would kill her. And he's not even thinking about that. There is another moment where Bella's like, I'm a little disappointed because it would be nice if I could find just one thing that you didn't do better than everyone else on the planet. And Rosalie's like, ugh. Yeah. And Edward says, Rosalie wasn't the only one who groaned at that, but she was the loudest. Imagine everyone just being like, oh my god.
It's funny because I'm sure, like, if this hadn't, you know, been the plot coming, whatever, and they had all gone home from this and, like, gone home at night, they would, Edward wouldn't be there because he'd be watching Bella sleep, and they would all be like, ew.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which brings us back to our conversation about people who think it's annoying or not.
Yeah. I wonder who else groaned, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like Emmett, for sure. Maybe Jasper. I don't know if Alice would. I don't know if...
Carlisle and Esme like Carlisle probably would. But...
They'd probably be like, yes, my prodigy son. Yeah. Like, he's so good at everything
Golden
he does.
Golden boy, Edward.
Like, yeah.
There's another really funny part here where they he talks about how everyone's swearing except for Carlisle. And that Rosalie calls him a pathetic cheating tool and also a leprous swine.
Oh my god. And he says that he usually would be like trash talking back, but that he's on his best behavior because Bella's there. And I'm like, this is so funny.
Yeah.
Like, this is such an amazing added element to the baseball scene that they are fiercely competitive with each other. And like, this is not funny and fun. Like, to them, it's like extremely serious.
Yes. Rosalie wasn't the only one hurling insults as we played, but this time Carlisle wasn't the only person who wasn't, and it's only because of Edward.
Which is funny because it's like Alice, Jasper, Emmett, Esme, like they all get into it.
Yeah. Well, the plot arrives.
The plot arrives.
But I have to say that like it feels like the plot has been here because I feel like Midnight Sun has more of a plot than Twilight does.
Yeah, I was going to say that earlier, but I think I didn't, maybe. It feels like there's two plots in Midnight Sun. Mm-hmm. One of them being the knot in the meadow scene.
Yes.
Whereas for Twilight, the meadow scene is exposition and, like, character building and also, like, fluff, honestly. Mm-hmm. For Midnight Sun, it's, like, it's part of the huge plot. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, Midnight Sun has these two plots where it has, like, the Twilight plot plus this knot.
Like, Bella being hunted and, like, undergoing this whole thing is, like, so much more for Edward's character arc than it is for hers. And we've definitely talked about that before.
Yeah, I mean, she comes out of it essentially the same, and he comes out of it incredibly fucked up.
Yeah. This did answer some questions that I had about why Bella and Edward could not retreat, because the three of the nomads are coming, they're scouting from three different angles, and if Bella and Edward left out the back way, then they would get probably trailed. I'm excited to, like, hear their thoughts for real.
Yeah, same.
One thing that I thought was interesting on the last page of this chapter is that Edward begins tapping his foot to the rhythm of Bella's heartbeat to try to disguise it. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's just, like, the little things that they're trying to disguise. I mean, they all know that it's not going to work. I mean,
disasters.
Whatever.
Impending.
But And it does. It hinges on the choices of the people coming. It hinges on their choices. So Alice can't really see through it because there's other players that don't know there's a human there yet. So it's not like she sees... what's gonna happen,
and the way that Edward is going to react to everything also changes
Jesus Christ
everything.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Meaty section.
Oh, yeah,
full of horrible wonderful discoveries.
Next time we have chapter 22 The Hunt. Can't wait to get into this. I'm so excited for like very different settings.
Yeah, this will be the first time that Bella and Edward are separate since the very beginning of the book.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening this week.
We'll see you next time. Is it the new year? Who knows? What time
Happy
is
new
in
year.
The future? What's your new year's resolution?
Yeah. Hope you're getting ready to find a Valentine.
Yeah. Has the race war started yet?
Oh my god. Does the USA exist? Write in and let us know.
Hope you're all well.
Love you so much.
Yeah. And that's all, folks. Thank you for listening to Gender Forking, a Twilight Saga podcast. All of seasons 1 and 2 are now streaming.
To stay updated about the podcast, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @genderforking. For more Twilight content from us, follow us at bowlingshirtbellas@tumblr.com.
For other inquiries, email us at bowlingshirtbellas@gmail.com. If you would like to support the production and maintenance of this podcast, head to patreon.com/genderforking.
The music you are hearing is from O. Lucifer.